Last in key business metrics and first in our hearts, it's That's So MLS, a Major League Soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
That was a good one. I think that's my new favorite intro. You set the bar high.
There's been a lot of things happening in Major League Soccer, and Major League Soccer discussions.
There's been a lot of things happening in soccer, period.
Not the least, we've got this preparation, I think, for what's going to be a back-breaking 11 games next week. We did have 11 games taking place in two kind of chunks of two on Sunday.
Yeah, that was a doozy. That was a busy, busy Sunday of soccer.
Next week, they're all going to be at the same time.
Great. Sure, why not?
I was able to watch the 5 Eastern Conference games concurrently. like the Watchmen character.
Yeah.
Just watching all of the television happening at once.
All right. So how do we want to break this down here? I guess we're going to start in the West because that's where there was the most playoff movement on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So let's take a look at some of those matches. So in the West, we had kind of an interesting, if you can call it a rematch, between Sporting KC and Houston Dynamo. They played midweek, and there's been so much soccer I've already forgotten who won that. It was Sporting KC, right? Houston.
No.
That was the shock win by Houston. My goodness. I'm ready.
Houston and Sporting Kansas City have both secured their positions after a series of games that were not necessarily to their best interests. Especially Kansas City. Kansas City clinched while I think having another awful week after a series of kind of awful results. It's the fourth. It's a draw, so it's a you know 1 point from six.
Yeah,
it's not great.
Not heading into the playoffs.
No, they're not. They've picked the greatest. They've picked perhaps the least ideal time to have a slump.
Well, there's a number of other teams. Well, one in particular that's had the same kind of rough patch, although not as bad. But watching the game, the shocking thing to me is, I mean, KC had all the possession, had all the chances. And we've talked about this before, is that they've just struggled so much to convert. We know how defensively strong they can be, but I don't see a playoff situation where they're going to get very far if they can't put some more goals away.
No.
I mean, their total goals for is quite low, but it's not as bad as San Jose's. but still, I mean, it's very telling, 39 goals for. All the teams above them have at least 10 more goals than they do. However, of course, they've also conceded far fewer, 10 fewer, in fact, or more, than all the three teams above them. But it was remarkable how many times you heard Benny Fellhaber's name in that game for him doing a thing, but none of those things was actually putting the ball in the back of the net. And without a consistent goal scorer, I think they're going to be pretty limited in what they can do in the playoffs unless they have some sort of secret trick up their sleeves. I don't see it happening.
You see a lot of great movement from, I think, Jimmy and Bedranda. You see a lot great from Roger Espinoza, but they just can't do it. They've been a little snake bit. I feel like I recall off the top of my head there were in the second of those two games, which was a 0-0 draw, there were 41 shots on goal. Or no, shots on goal. 41 total shots,
right.
So counting shots off target between the two teams.
Yeah.
Just as whoever posted this on Twitter noted, just your average 0-0 draw.
Yeah, well, and I mean, as you mentioned, Madrenda's movement is fantastic, and the goalkeeping heroics of Houston helped, but yeah, it couldn't quite land for them. Despite, you know, they're where they are in the West and heading into the playoffs because of their strong defensive form. That's going to be very, very hard for teams to break down. However, when you look at the teams that are above them and some of the possible matchups, if they can't get goals, they're going to struggle, and I don't see them going very far in this playoff picture.
It's a scenario where when these games are so tight, any one thing going in any different direction completely changes the narrative. Ty Derrick, the Houston goalkeeper, making that wonderful save, I believe at the end of the 0-0 draw.
Yeah.
If that does not happen, Kansas City are tied for first in the West.
Yeah.
It didn't. That's not what we're talking about.
It sure didn't. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think that's the interesting thing about this time of year is the rest of the year you can talk about all these different hypotheticals, but it's now really coming to a fine point when you're looking at the playoff picture that teams don't have time to screw around and try to figure things out. And for the teams that have not yet figured out what that winning formula is for them, I feel like they're going to crash and burn because they're facing some very strong competition. And these are also, you know, the odd thing about the way the playoffs has worked out, at least in the West, is that a lot of these teams who have been playing each other towards the end of the season are likely going to end up playing each other in the playoffs pretty soon here.
Yes.
Which I know, like, sounds like an obvious statement, but if they haven't been able to crack the code yet and figure it out, it's going to be really, really difficult for them to get results. Speaking of difficulty in getting results, I mean, I was there, but I want to know what you thought of the Vancouver-San Jose match.
Right. I did see that one. Let me just... I feel like there's so much that it scrubbed from my brain.
I know, it's hard. I feel like I need to be actually watching the highlights to be like, oh, right, this is what happened. And again, I was there.
Right. It was really... When it comes to the Vancouver Whitecaps in the first place spot, you have to say that as we've been talking about, it's been forever since the last time a conference winner won an MLS Cup.
Yeah.
It's been, we've talked a little bit about whether or not the bye in the first round of the playoffs does present a competitive advantage, or not, or whether or not it disadvantages the team that has it. So I kind of look at this, I know it does seem kind of demoralizing for the Whitecaps to have taken the lead, to surrender the lead and not really be able to get, I don't think, too close in getting it back. But I don't think it hurts too much.
No, I think people are right in that even assessing the blowout in New York, that they shouldn't be too troubled by it. It's an okay result. I think there's a couple of ways of reading it, and I haven't heard Carl Robinson's comments on it yet. I mean, San Jose is fighting for that last spot, and they're in with a whisper, if not a prayer, currently ahead of Dallas, which helps because... I'm looking at this, and I can't quite figure out why they're ahead of Dallas. Anyway, so they... And they
wins!
Total wins. That's where... I was looking at the goal difference, and I was like, well, San Jose has minus 22, and Dallas has minus 4, but right, it's the total wins.
That was that freak rule change in the middle of last season.
Right, yeah. Well, it's good to do that, to keep things interesting. and I was actually surprised at how... I don't want to say how little San Jose attacked, but basically everything that we've talked about that was wrong with San Jose all season, or at least the point where we started the podcast and started talking about it, is what they played like on Sunday. They had a lot of possession, but they tried to do everything through Wondolowski, and they totally lack creativity. There's very little movement up top from players. They have... they'll get a lot of possession in the final third. They will get a few chances, but it's almost shocking how little they seem to be able to do and to think about. They've really only got one tactic, which is the direct attack straight through Wando. And because Wondolowski's, everything's playing through him, he's got to set everything up. And often that means he's trying to sort of set it up for himself. I think the thing that's going to make Vancouver Whitecaps fans nervous heading into the playoffs is that this should have been the game that clinched that number one spot for them. That they, as we've talked about, they should be able to put games like these away tidily. And they actually, for the first time, got worse after they got scored on. And the sort of comeback kids, Waston was back in the lineup. Reyna was back in the lineup. The spirit that we've seen in them that has gotten them out of situations like this and maybe coming away with more than just a point at home, that it was sort of like all the same problems came back to haunt them on Sunday. And if they are going to continue this tactic of having virtually no possession, they need to hold onto the ball when they have it. Chani and Gazal, I don't know how many turnovers there were. It's not enough for a modern center mid to just break up play. And against a team like San Jose that enjoys so much possession, again, doesn't necessarily produce a lot with it. They're like, okay, great, you make the tackle, and they'd win the ball. And then instead of taking a touch or looking for the open guy, they're either booting it over the top to nobody or passing it directly back to a San Jose player. And just the number of turnovers that happened again and again and again. You look at any of the teams in the playoff standings right now, and you got to think they will all capitalize on that and really punish the Whitecaps for it.
I have said from the time that they first slipped into that number one spot that I've never been, that it's never made me sleep any easier.
No, and it does feel a little lucky at this point. One bright spot that I'll say, and it was probably a bit surprising for a number of folks, possibly even you, is that Stefan Marinović started the game.
Yes, we were talking about this. There is one more match, so I don't know. I feel like if the real answer is two on the bounce heading into the playoffs, and I think that's the thing. Sewn up if Marinović starts next week. Otherwise, it may have just been the idea that this is gravy.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, Carl Robinson, we know, is a pretty pragmatic coach, and it could very well just be, hey, look, I don't care if we come in first. If we get a point, we get a point. We likely won't lose the game. We know Marinović is a great goalkeeper, so we can trust him to not make some glaring error, which he didn't. In fact, he probably came away with arguably save of the year on the night.
Again.
Like, just... And the thing that... Unfortunately, the Whitecaps weren't able to capitalize on it, again, is his ball distribution. He's just so much more aware of where his teammates are and getting the ball to them that they really lack through Ostead. If there's one downside to Ostead, it's that he really does struggle on the goal kicks and to find open players or to get it as far down the pitch as it needs to go. But, you know, again, like, as you said, it's not the end of the world. They're still in first. The tricky thing is now they're going away to Portland, in Portland, to a very good Portland side that, in short, completely steamrolled DC United. Not an unexpected result, but certainly putting a fine emphasis on the point.
Arcane possession magic is one thing. Being able to score four, is another. And both Portland and Seattle made strong declarations of purpose.
Yeah. That is an excellent diplomatic way of putting it. And I don't think we need to break apart either of those games too much. Dallas's defending is just absolutely abominable. And, like, if I didn't know that the Dallas defenders had pride on the line, I would say they were paid off at how horrible they were defending. They were just dismal. But, yeah, you've got Seattle and Portland chomping at the heels of the Whitecaps in the West. Both teams arguably against not great sides at the moment, but 8 goals between them and clean sheets is, as you said, a strong declaration of intention and just fantastic results for them heading into the playoffs. They've got the wind in the sails, and you can tell they're going to chase it. You feel like both teams want to try to steal that first spot from the Whitecaps.
2 of those 4 for Portland were scored outside of the box, which I think is an attempt to, if you take it as a statement, that shows that they really have the skill to score from anywhere. Seattle, who I think had the tougher matchup in a team that was still kind of fighting for a playoff spot, although, you know, you wonder what this does, whether or not they will be able to sort of keep it together. And who is their opponent? I think it's L.A.
Right. Who also came away with a big win.
Yes. And for Seattle, it was a lot of stuff in the box, or a lot of runs.
Yes,
a lot of runs, a lot of plays with the ball at the feet.
Yeah,
very good, except for the header from Lamar Nagel, and so that was really a little bit more teamwork than individual stuff, I think. Well, depending on how you look at that breakaway, but. That was the first goal by Victor Rodriguez, but a slightly different brand than what Portland is putting forward, but also very powerful.
Absolutely, and we saw that in display when Seattle played Vancouver last, is the speed on their team, not just in transition, but their ability to cut through defenses, even good defenses, is going to serve them very, very well. To see Will Bruin come in and get the brace as well, they've got to be very pleased about that. And, you know, as much sort of stick as Will Bruin is given for maybe not producing as many goals as perhaps people think he should, the fact that you have a big, strong, straight-ahead, no-nonsense guy who can come off the bench and bag those 2 goals, he's very difficult to defend against because, again, he likes to take it on his feet. He scored 1 goal. He's being sort of dragged down and hugged around the waist. He's got a singular focus on trying to score. And again, some of these teams that have struggled defensively, even teams above them in the West and the East, I think Seattle has got to think their chances against them are pretty good. And I can't help but sort of bring it up again. Who knows? It could be a rematch of last year's. and a pretty tasty one at that. And hopefully this time the two teams won't just cancel each other out.
A note of caution. Ozzie Alonso has been missing from the midfield since picking up some sort of leg issue in the Vancouver game. And the person who's been filling in for him is Gustav Svensson. And he left the game with an injury as well.
Mm.
So they're now going to be down to the third string in that midfield position.
Shoot. Well, I mean, not shoot. I'm making it sound like I'm cheering for them here. But yeah, that's going to be a point of concern for them.
But they are. It's the speed going forward that helps. So.
Yeah. And if you're playing it down the wings, and you know, there's ways of covering up that gap a little bit.
Mm-hmm. The other 2 results in the West, I had. Josh Gatt scoring his only second ever goal to again make a terrible time for RSL. RSL and Sporting Kansas City are going to be 2 sad teams meeting on the last day of the season.
I don't know who to feel sorry for I'm both equally so, you know, I think Colorado deserves some of the results. Obviously it means nothing and at this point, but credit to them. But Real Salt Lake, such a late push and so close to really getting somewhere and salvaging something of this just nightmare season for them, that was not for lack of trying, but Gatt's goal and just the beautiful little almost no flick from Gordon to put it through to him in the 3rd minute and then to just hang on. Colorado, for me, gets the vote of peskiest pain in the ass team this year. that, like, there's nothing on the line for them, and they just come in and steal it.
I have my reactions are completely different for two different teams. Colorado, I have sympathy for.
Yeah,
they worked so hard, and there was a very late play where the ball had gotten past Tim Howard and Marlon Hairston with a picture perfect tackle on the goal line to take the ball off of Joel Plata. Through tracking back, through just sort of getting into position, hustling really hard, it is very unfortunate for a team like this that they did not find it in them to do it a moment earlier.
Yeah.
But like for Colorado, I could take pity on them. I also loved a moment in the game where the Colorado announcers, when Luke Mulholland took a shot, seemed to release with his own Mulholland with a drive, which I feel like he must have been practicing for several weeks.
Just waiting for that shot. Mulholland's drive! Yeah, I agree. As we've both talked about, Colorado is a massively underrated team, and they kind of got written off this year through poor results. And I think people like to give shtick to teams that don't have great attendance, as Colorado's seen this year, but great result for them. And that's the kind of thing that you want to see from a team that knows they've got nothing in it, but is going to try anyway, give the fans something to think about for next year, and, you know, play with some pride. And unfortunately, speaking of teams playing with pride or lack thereof, the farewell send-off for dear Mr. Kaká was nothing short of, again, everything we've seen wrong with Orlando's season. They did again against Columbus. And I feel like if there's a team that deserved to lose and a team that has capitulated and just handed over the reins, and we've talked about individual performances on and off the field that have contributed to that, I very rarely feel this, but I actually felt quite bad for Kaká that his teammates couldn't rally and produce something for him.
It was, I got the gist of it, and that was that I think that it was a moment in search of a better stage, you know? Like, obviously it meant a lot to Kaká, it meant a lot to the fans, but you know, if only they could have been in a better position, if only the match itself could have been more than nothing.
More than, yeah. for
Orlando.
And I feel like that's a fair assessment of it. It really was quite poor from them, again. And it was unfortunate to see Kaká put in so much effort and play, really, as he has done the whole time he's been there. He's... You know, yes, this is kind of his retirement years. But I thought that overall he's done a lot for Orlando. And it was, I would imagine there's possibly a little bit of bitterness there that his teammates couldn't turn around and do something for him to at least see him off. But what are you going
to
do?
Two kids invaded the pitch to say goodbye to him, which I think tells you everything you need to know about the level of tension and seriousness about that game.
Yeah. And it's it really is unfortunate. I feel like the Orlando fans deserve a lot better from their team. You know, we'll see. But as has already been alluded to, it's going to be a very different Orlando side next year, and probably not a lot of names from this year.
Another team that I don't have much in the way of sympathy for is the Los Angeles Galaxy.
Yep.
They got their 3-0 win against Minnesota in a game where little mattered. Yep. You did see VAR called into play for the second goal, kind of a replay of the Frank Lampard thing where a World Cup non-call where a ball bounces off the crossbar and clearly by cameras is over the line but was not called at the time. And that was correctly called a goal. But I just think this beautiful one-on-one on the 93rd minute from Roman Alessandrini in the second-to-last game of the season in a two-goal game long after the playoffs is the metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah. you know, and we've talked about how LA is going to be a team where not a lot of names are returning next year, but I think Roman Alessandrini will be one of them for sure. Not that there was ever any doubt about his quality, but as you said, it's a perfect metaphor for how their season has gone and what happens to MLS sides that over-rely on players. And we've seen LA do this with other stars as well, that they sort of put in a few critical pieces but aim for more star power than substance at times. And we've seen that when they've over-relied on Donovan to do everything for them, and then they go through these dips and become a very beatable team. And, you know, in the case of LA, too, it really doesn't seem like it's just lack of quality. It just seems like a lot of players don't seem to care. And I don't know if that's just projecting or me trying to channel some of the LA Galaxy's fans' frustrations, but it must be incredibly frustrating to watch your team put on a solid professional performance against a good Minnesota side, a Minnesota side that struggled, but we know what they're about. We know they can win. And I don't think anybody would have said they were out of it against LA, at least prior to the match. So, yeah, what else can you say other than, okay, so LA got the 3 points, which still puts them at 32, which still puts them dead last, and did nothing to affect Minnesota, who still has 36 points and still not going to the playoffs. So things have changed a little bit around the league, but there was also some results with that kind of did nothing to the table, and the games themselves resulted nothing.
New York Atlanta, 0-0.
Yeah,
it was fine. Yep.
People showed up.
The Red Bulls continue their string of getting into the playoffs despite being slightly uninspiring.
And depending week to week, you're not too sure which side is going to actually show up, which New York Red Bulls you'll see, even if it's the same players. The New England New York City FC result, big result for New England. Once again, not a one that matters. but good for them, and same thing there. Right? They again another team that's been written off, and a pretty deserving 3 points, and gives the coach something to think about in the off season.
New York about to play out the string for Pirlo as well, who has also taken his bow.
Yeah. It was a weird week. You'd think these announcements would be made after at least the regular season. It's sort of like, guys, you know that we're still playing, right? Like, there's still time to go. Like,
right, especially for Pirlo, who will be in the playoffs, unlike Kaká.
Yeah. Like, Kaká makes sense, of course, because you know it is his actual last game. But Pirlo is like, yeah, why take the wind out of your team's sails? Like, wouldn't you want to just pretend and see if you can clinch the win? But
yeah, the newsroom in my my new newsroom at the Telegraph Journal got a great laugh out of a quick moment on commentary after the first goal, where you see the assistant coach Remy Roy talking to Tom Sain on the sidelines in like a toque. And the commentator says, "I don't know why Remy is wearing a hat. It's boiling in here." And the other commentator says, "Well, he's from New Brunswick, and that's how they dress.
And it's not a hat."
Americans have never learned how to categorize toques. Practically in the key game in terms of how things were going to play out, I think, in the East was this Chicago-Philadelphia game, which went all kinds of directions.
It sure did. I don't even know what... I'm going to be following Philadelphia Union a lot more closely next season. I believe CJ Sapong got another goal, if I'm not mistaken.
No, because... Yes. The second goal was CJ Sapong. The first one was the own goal.
Right. And again, just capitalizing on mistakes. Great for Nikolic. He's, I hope he gets the golden boot. He seems in prime position for it, and he's just been absolutely fantastic for Chicago. But he had a team that has really been up and down with their defensive play this year, and at times looked red hot and impenetrable, and then, as was the case on Sunday, just looked like coming up all sides, all different sides of just being switched off and not tracking runners. And I feel like it was one of those games where Nikolic just decided they were going to win. And they were very lucky that he decided that, because on a night where maybe Nikolic doesn't put one of those away, things become very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we'll be a... go ahead.
No.
What I was just going to say, it's going to be, again, one of those things of concern that, yes, Philadelphia is a good, scrappy side, and they're never quite out of it, but you would feel like that matchup would be a little bit more uneven and probably something Chicago should deal with. And as you sort of said at the beginning of this, these are teams that are in 2 weeks or maybe slightly more, depending on where they end up, in the playoffs, and they've got to perform. And this is not the time to be still making these silly little errors. Own goals happen, but they really allowed Philadelphia to play themselves into that match too much, and they've got to be managing games much better if they're wanting to produce in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I wanted to mention before we got too far away from the New York City game was that there was another instance of a red card being called back by Disco, which was, I think, Jack Harrison. He had been... I don't have this in my notes, but Jack Harrison basically had gone in on a challenge. It was unclear whether or not the ball bounced off his foot or whether or not it bounced off the leg as he was sliding in. But really, like, he kind of slid in with his legs around the defender's planted leg and did not knock over the defender. And the leg kind of slid up between his legs. And he got a straight red for that. And so this has been, I think somebody pointed out, as possibly the third VAR-assisted red card that had been turned over later on.
Mm.
The official involved was demoted to VAR duty in the next game, which I don't know is the...
It feels like sort of solving the wrong problem somewhat, or making it worse. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't know. I don't have the stats on how MLS this season has stacked up against other leagues. It happens in any league in the world, in the best leagues in the world, but it does feel like MLS, this has just been a habitual problem. And I think the point you're trying to raise, too, is, like, well, what's the point in having VAR if VAR is incorrect and then Disco has to, like, how many layers of bureaucracy do you need to just decide something like a red card? And at the end of the day, it should be the official's decision, and that, I know it's not easy, but there's, if you're going to be handing out a straight red, it needs to be clear and obvious. And that's supposed to be the way VAR works as well. So if there's any question, and the fact that it was overturned tells me there is, then, like, it doesn't matter how many systems you have. You've just, on goals and on penalties and on red cards, you've got to be 100% certain. You can't guess about it.
I can't, I have to clarify that I don't know that all three of those red cards are, including this one, were actually, if they did go to VAR at the time, or if it was just after the introduction
right.
of VAR. But they're all flagged anyways.
Yeah.
Somebody's looking at every red card.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Regardless of whether or not they do the little thing.
Yeah. Whether they motion or not, VAR is in the background. With you always, trust VAR.
Toronto fans got to swallow the supporter shield up into the south stand at BMO Field.
They did.
The color commentators slightly worried during the course of the game whether or not it was still in the stadium.
It's just absconded down to the local pub. Yeah.
There had the moment where they were all lined up for the team, and it, like, it didn't take too long to get the shield up, but there was like a half moment where it's like, wait, where's the shield?
Bob, did you bring the shield? No, it's called the community shield. The community's taken it. They've left, actually. Yes, it was good for Toronto and a deserved result. Montreal switched off a little bit. I mean, they're always in it for a fight. But I think we saw on Sunday a very clear reason why Toronto is number one and why Montreal is number eight and not in the playoffs.
There is one team that we have basically skipped over in their performance, and I think that has dovetailed with the fact that they have been completely overshadowed. That's a Columbus Crew.
Yeah.
Who won 1-0 and then had today, or had the news, I think, break earlier today or last night, that the owner is demanding a stadium by 2019 or he will move to Austin. Anthony Precourt.
Yeah, so, I mean, and I just saw this morning as well and was just like, oh, well, that's got to feel good for the fans that finally had something to cheer about. Politics aside, I get it, you know, power plays and things like that, and I don't know the full backstory, but again, your team just made it into the playoffs. They just clinched. They just got another big result against Orlando. They're quietly putting together a nice run of games heading into the playoffs. Why would you make this announcement right now? Like, explain to me the logic of the timing of this. I mean, it sounded like perhaps there was a leak, and then they just decided to strategically be like, oh yes, we planned this. Let's have a news conference about how this team you love that's in the playoffs, though they may not be here in 2 years.
The leak was actually that the news conference happening was the leak.
Yeah.
Like, that was like the leak, like that was when the report started, came out when the conference got scheduled. And it really seems weird, the whole situation. They are demanding their point is Columbus was one of the MAPRE Stadium, which was one of the first soccer specific stadium in 1999,
mm-hmm.
Is behind the times, they say, despite the fact that it is the go to U.S. men's national team stadium. They can't make enough money off of it, and they need some support. Now, what public support needs to be made in order to get in order to have a new stadium or have a downtown stadium? He's not said. Like, he said that the funding will be majority private on trying to get a stadium in Columbus. But there are a couple really worrying things. One of them is that a group of local business leaders say that they offered to buy the team off of him or buy a 50-50 share in order to lessen this financial blow that they seem to have been feeling.
Yeah.
The fact that the lease that he signed or whatever when he purchased the team had like a 10-year must stay in Columbus contract with an escape clause specifically to go to Austin.
Yeah.
Also the fact that the MLS has registered two Austin team names and they did that in the summer. And there are reports that the deal is basically done to play at the University of Texas. There's a lot of, you know, weird stuff going on, and you would look at the MLS at this point and say, "Don't let them move your charter club."
Yeah.
Don't let them move your key team that has been a part of the league since its beginning, and they've come forward with this press conference where they said, "Oh well, when you look at the league, it's at the bottom in all of the key business indicators."
Which is not untrue. And the old guard of MLS clubs are all sort of in a similar boat. But it is worrying because it is one of those things. I agree. It sounds like it's a done deal. Like it's really just a matter of how and when, not if. And so again, I just really don't understand the timing of this. Leaks or not, you think surely they could have just said, like, no, that's all lies, fake news. However, we are going to have a press conference in December to talk about the future of Columbus and see where this team is headed. It's very bizarre, but as we've seen, nothing is sacred in MLS. They don't care about the support or the legacy piece or anything like that. And that's proven by the fact that they've already made so many moves towards
it. Sucks. Austin. It sucks so bad.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. It's pretty unfair for the fans, and regardless of this year's results and where they are,
it's really unfortunate.
It's bad times. Bad times for Columbus Crew fans, especially as their club is actually starting to achieve some cool things this season and heading into the playoffs. And one thing I would love is if Columbus makes it to the final, wins MLS Cup, and then Don Garber has to eat his words. And they're like, oh, no, 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 Austin, goodness, no, Columbus, they're one of our key teams. We've got ways of getting more fans in the stadium. Yeah, this is the kind of thing that turns people off of MLS, and they just seem to not care about totally screwing over a market for a team. Yeah, I mean, it's like, this isn't hockey. You can't just pick up a team and move it.
I'm looking at pictures from the website Massive Report, which is a Columbus Crew website, covering website, of like the bar, a bar called Hendox, full of Columbus Crew fans drinking sad beers.
Why aren't they happy about the new potential marketplace?
It never saves you. It sucks. It sucks. And I know that there is an extent where if you have pro sports, people have to be paid. But it sucks that success cannot save you. You know?
And especially...
It almost didn't save the Penguins, the Pittsburgh Penguins.
That's the thing, right? Is that in the world of professional sports, again, this is what turns people off of sports, is that it is all about the money. Absolutely, unequivocally, 100%, it's about the money. And it doesn't matter what you achieve as a team. It doesn't matter how good you are. The support of the fans, etc. Like, I get that it's not a sustainable model and that these are businesses and they, you know, they need to be earning back what they're spending. But there are just so many other ways of going about this. This just all feels very cloak and dagger. And just when Columbus Crew had something to rally behind and cheer about, they just get shafted. And, like... What incentive is there to play in the playoffs now? I would just feel so demoralized after what they've achieved.
This happens in the middle of an expansion cycle, which makes you really think about San Antonio, which makes all of a sudden Detroit and Nashville sound much better. Or sorry, not Nashville. Yes, Nashville, but also Cincinnati is what I was thinking about. But you also think that it is such poor timing for the league because I can't see this being anything but a San Jose Earthquakes, Cleveland Browns style situation where the ownership group wants to move, the league is unwilling or unable to stop them, and then pretty much immediately or with whatever amount of distance in between, they have to start from scratch all over again.
Well, and I get to that. I don't know how much this plays into it. It's very exciting to see a team like Atlanta come into the league, spend a buttload of money, and do very well. And they like these flashy expansion sides. But there does seem to be a favoring in terms of MLS towards these expansion sides and sort of forgetting about the older clubs. And, you know, it's hard to engage a broader sports fan base with just new flashy things, and that, you know, it's just about getting bums in seats and selling shirts and things like that. That's great, but it's not great if those people don't come back. And at some point, if you want a sustainable structure, you need to invest in teams and invest in cities that have a long track record of support. There's no guarantee that, I mean, okay, they've talked about Austin's soccer market, et cetera, but it also feels a bit strange to just totally forsake the Columbus Crew fan base and just say, well, you know what? You guys can, what's close to you? Minnesota? Tell you what, why don't you just become a Minnesota fan?
Austin couldn't do its USL team twice.
What? I don't like this deal, Andrew. I don't like it at all. I'm frustrated on Columbus's behalf.
No.
Again.
No. I was cutting off there, but Austin lost its USL team twice. Another situation where players and fans are having a little bit of challenge with rushing emotions are supporters and players of the U.S. men's national team, who in a crazy storm of events lost to Trinidad and Tobago.
I like Roman Torres. I think he's good.
with Roman Torres. Scoring.
What do you think
goal.
That locker room conversation was like on Sunday when he came back to Seattle? Do you think him and Dempsey had a towel fight?
Oh yeah, I'm sure they were best buds. With another key point of discussion being a Blas Perez clearly not a goal for Panama. A ball, I think in the Honduras game, a ball bounced in off of a goalkeeper. Like, it couldn't have been worse. This is the darkest timeline for the United States. Their supporters are traumatized. Some of the players, you've got to think, are traumatized. And part of this, you know, people are now asking questions, you know, what, trying to soul search about how they're going to change their development system. And Major League Soccer put out a statement saying, along with all the U.S. national team supporters across this great soccer nation, which always gets some certain Canadian fans rankled when they position themselves.
Do we have teams up here?
We're disappointed the United States did not qualify for the World Cup. Major League, later in the press release, Major League Soccer is more committed ever than building a sport in the U.S. and Canada. We will continue to invest in all aspects of the sport, player development, creating world-class stadiums and training facilities to having clubs that are committed to their communities, which they say in the week before Columbus decides to.
We're committed, but if not enough people show up, we'll cut it right away.
We're committed as long as the key business indicators.
Get those indicators up, boys. Now, there's the U.S.'s problem. They probably just didn't have enough key business indicators.
Somebody photoshopped the Columbus crest to be the Austin key business indicators.
Was it you?
No, but I would have had it not been. And so I think that there's two issues at play here, which is I don't think that you see as strong of a reaction from MLS when Canada misses qualifying.
Can I jump in and say something that's going to possibly alienate myself from our listeners and possibly you as well?
Sure.
Canada didn't have a chance of getting into the World Cup. So, like, let's be real. And Canada will. I think Canada's headed in a good direction. But I think part of this disappointment, and I hate that MLS is always talking about, like, well, this great soccer nation, also Canada sometimes, they've got the Spuzzum Scarecrows or something. They're good. But the U.S. is disappointed because they've actually made the World Cup before and caused some teams some trouble, whereas Canada has really not come close and is a very beatable team. So the expectations are much lower, and it's Canadian fans who are disappointed when we lose, but it's really with sort of a twinkle in our eye and a song in our heart that we're like, oh, shucks, I really thought, like, the future's coming, but it ain't here yet. With the States, the bar was set for them to at least qualify.
You haven't spent as much time with Toronto-based fans as the Canadian men's national team.
True.
Have.
Now I can't go to Toronto safely anymore.
I think that there is a little concern. Canada is always in the push for the Canadian Premier League. Canadian fans have always wondered whether or not the MLS has its best interest at heart. Now, United States men's national team fans are also asking that question. Whether or not it's the pro-rel discussion, whether or not it is, whether or not it has benefited other CONCACAF sides by getting their stars more money and exposure. I hope that this does not harm, you know, as much as it has been good to have Canadian sides in MLS, and it has been, I think, unquestionably great for growth of the game in general, if not necessarily the national program. I think the league was always an instrument to improve the U.S. men's team, and I hope that they don't become more closed-minded in measures that might help Canada as well. Or just otherwise, you know, I hope this doesn't take up too much of their focus to, you know, have them stop having the conversation about Canadian players, you know, domestics or whatever. That might be a tougher road to hoe now than it was before. So, of course, also condolences. You know, I think of fans, friends that I know that are fans of the U.S. team that have, like, you know, been to all the World Cups that they've had the opportunity to go to and had to cancel their tickets, and it's the joy of going to one is not something I can relate to yet, but it obviously really sucks.
Yeah, it does, but I think that I'm gonna get hanged for this too, but I think Bruce Arena and a lot of the players were correct of, like, they deserve it. Like, they only have themselves to blame, and you can only say that so many times before you address that and you change something. And I think the upshot here is that there's these incredible players coming through the system that are going to add so much to the U.S., but they've just relied on some pretty tired characters and sort of two direct approaches to trying to get results. And at key moments have really let themselves down. So I guess where I see things as being disappointed and angry over things being, and despondent rather than it being like, what? How did we not qualify? It's not disbelief. It's just like, well, yeah, if you play like crap, then you're not gonna get in.
Yeah, absolutely. You lose to, you have the result at Panama. You've put yourself in the situation. Yeah. Unfortunate and strange as it may be. One happier note that I just want to get in before we blast off into the stratosphere is that Canadian women's national team captain Christine Sinclair won her second NWSL title with the Portland
Thorns.
She sure
did.
It was a 1-0, a tight windmill match with the North Carolina Courage. These two teams had combined to have a blockbuster semifinal last year. This time, really tight and cagey. Lots of physical play, including two North Carolina players going off in the first half.
Oh, shoot.
Before Lindsay Horan
scored. Oh, I missed
scored.
That part.
Not being sent off, being taken off for injury.
Still.
Yes, there was a... I think that there was... Dan Laletta of Equalizer Soccer had been talking before the game about how both teams were trying to underdog themselves. I'm more the underdog. No, I'm more the underdog. But North Carolina had something of a complaint to be made when there was a lot of physical play and players coming down and wondering where the yellow cards were. Especially on a player like Tony Heath, who had come back and was down for a long time herself, once Portland had the lead. And I think did eventually get a yellow card, but they had been like, well, where's the first yellow card that should have been given making this a red, you know? Like, it was a tough game for that, but Portland really was able to get forward, was able to absorb pressure from North Carolina, and it was super cool to see Christine Sinclair win her, I believe, fourth Women's Pro League title.
Yeah, she doesn't smile much, Christine Sinclair, but she smiles when she wins championships. So, you know, at least once a year, you're going to see a very happy Christine Sinclair.
Yes. So that was wonderful. Anything else you want to
I'm going
to
close off on just one sort of anecdotal piece here, which will just be more of a story time footnote thing. Is you might have seen in the news this week that young Canadian and Whitecap star Alphonso Davies sort of played a bit of a hero citizen by calling 911 when he was going past a burning building on Broadway here in Vancouver. One that I just happened to be walking past as well at the exact same time, both of us having just come from the Whitecaps game. So I had a very, very surreal, very brief encounter with Alphonso Davies as we watched a drum store burn completely to the ground, which was very unfortunate and pretty scary. But good to know Alphonso Davies can rise to the challenge, at least when burning houses are concerned. I will let you extrapolate into your own metaphors as to his performances on the pitch.
I have so many questions. I already asked if you two teamed up to fight crime, and you said you didn't, and that's okay. Yeah. I understand.
I can't keep up with a 16-year-old.
Were you wearing your kit at the time?
I had my jersey on. Yeah.
Nice. So he would have known, he would have seen that you knew.
We
who
made
he
eye
was.
Contact, but it was like, you know, what am I going to do? Like, hey, Fonzie, hey, man. There's like a fairly significant, intense fire burning meters away from us.
So you two are walking down the street at the same time. The fire breaks up. Davies is the one that calls the police. Are you telling me that you now know what it's like to be beaten to the punch by Alphonso Davies?
Not quite. It's not quite how it played out. The fire trucks were on their way as I was walking past, and I was like, what's going on? And then I was standing on the roof of a building across the road watching, because you don't know what else to do. You're like, it feels weird to spectate, but it also feels weird to leave when a building is on fire. Not like I'm going to be of any help. Like, if you need a hand, I'll be here. I'm ready. And then Davies sort of ran up the stairs and was sort of like looking around and seemed frazzled. So.
I bet. I mean, I guess it's a life experience.
Oh, and then, okay. So another thing I need to get out of the way is that a lot of the Whitecaps live in my neighborhood. It's just a thing. Every few months I have an encounter with them. And also, after we finished recording our podcast last week, I come out of the house and down the back stairs kind of leads to a bit of an alleyway, and a car was coming through, and there's really not enough room for a person to walk by in a car to get through. So I sort of step back and sort of wave the car through, and the guy sort of looks at me and gives a bit of a wave and looks a little bit lost. And it's Breck Shea and his wife and their baby looking very lost in my back alley.
Amazing.
So I was very glad that I didn't rip into his performance, and since apparently he's my neighbor, I'll just leave it at that.
That's right. You got to bring him a cup of sugar.
Yeah, I need to do my part and help out my neighbor Breck Shea to help him perform to his potential. That's what needs to happen.
Your neighbor Breck Shea is my new favorite first.
I've got a couple of other good stories, but I'll save those for another time.
Where can we find you online?
You can find me online at That's So MLS on Twitter. And, yeah, that's where.
You can find me online at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. Go to whatahowler.com and take a look at that fall issue.
I did that today. I looked at Howler. All this time I've just been like, yeah, do it. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know it was an exclusively soccer magazine, but now I know that. So take it from me, listeners. You should go check out Howler.
You could download this podcast on iTunes. Please rate, review, subscribe on whatever form you're picking it up on. Stay tuned for more information about how we plan to cover the MLS playoffs, which I think we'll be able to talk about next week. If we aren't dead from watching 11 games at once.
Oh, the screens. It'll be like that scene in Batman with all, when he's like, turn it on. All the screens.
You can barely even watch. You can barely even.
Well,
like,
the good thing is it's MLS, so you know you don't need to watch a few of the games. I mean.
That's
the show. Until next time, Andrew. I'm going to do it this time. See how I just stole that? You get the intro, I get the outro.
Do it.
Until next time, don't get sent off.
I won't!